welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction haunt entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return again. For us, it is Monday. For you, it is whatever day you choose to listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever time you mad lads and lasses choose to listen is perfectly fine by us. Does not harm us in any way. But hopefully you got this podcast from one of our many destinations and places you can receive it, including hauntweekly.com, which is our website, Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook, and tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel where a playlist of all the previous episodes are available. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. But yes, today's episode literally came in a dream.
Yeah.
It's not often I actually get to say that in this podcast. I actually came up with the topic for this one.
Right.
Literally in a dream. I'd woken up from a previously very bad dream and went back to bed and then had a dream where I was explaining to a new actor the importance of the first room. We were sticking them in the first room, which I don't know why we would do that with most of our first actors.
Yeah.
But whatever. We were doing it in the stream, and I spent a great deal of time explaining the importance and the function of the first room in a haunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up and went, wow, that's a really great idea for a podcast. And so this week we're doing the first room. I'm working on show notes already for next week, which will be the final room.
Yeah.
All about the importance and the role that room plays. And I don't know, maybe we'll bring it together with something about throughput after we're sort of combining everything into one thesis statement. Over this month of episodes.
That sounds pretty good.
All right. But anyways, first thing is first, time to do some conference reminders. Real fast with the conference reminders, we're getting up on some pretty crazy convention season, but a lot of the would-be contenders for this list have not updated. I do not have updates for the Haunted Attraction Network Symposium, which usually teams up with... usually is with blah, 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 blah. I know this one. It's usually with, Scare LA.
Right.
But that's probably because I also don't have information about Scare LA.
Mm-hmm.
They have not updated their site for 2019. The bastards.
Yeah.
So anyways, just letting you know what's going on there. If you're anticipating dates for one of those, that's what's happening. If you know the dates for one of those, please message us and bonk someone on the head so they update the websites. Thank you. All right, Crystal, kick it off.
All right. Midwest Haunters Convention is going to be June 7th through the 9th in Schaumburg, Illinois at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center Hotel. They will be touring Dead Rising, Midnight Terror, Massacre, Basement of the Dead, and Hell's Gate. MidwestHauntersConvention.com.
Yes, and they will also be near Berwyn.
Yes.
And they won't be in Berwyn. They'll be
no.
near Berwyn. You know, every time we speak to Japes, I have to resist making the Svengoolie jokes.
Yeah.
And then usually fail.
Yeah.
But yes, all those are great haunts. They are touring.
Yes.
And I know that Lost Souls is helping out with the Hell's Gate tour in particular. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on.
Right.
So check it out. After that, June 21st through the 23rd, it's Michigan Haunt Fest at the Oaks Campground in Munith, Michigan, featuring Make and Takes, a campsite decorating contest, and a pancake breakfast. Some of the proceeds benefit the Humane Society. MichiganHauntFest.weebly.com if you want more information.
Okay. Then, July 27th, in Mount Carroll, Illinois, it is the Haunter Horde Gathering at the Mount Carroll Bowling Center. They will be touring Raven's Grin Inn, auction for Scares That Care, and Don't Be a Monster will also be going on. Free pizza. You have to pay for your booze and other drinks. Admission is only $5. Tour of Raven's Grin Inn is an initial $15, so $20 for the whole package.
You're not going to beat that, trust me.
HaunterHorde.com for more info.
All right. After that, in Mesquite, Texas, at the Mesquite Convention Center, it's Texas Haunters Convention, July 27th through 28th. Features a meet and greet and a costume ball. TexasHauntersConvention.com. For more details, I'm really stoked about the trade show floor on that one.
Mm-hmm.
They've been selling, I think it's pretty much sold out now. A lot of awesome looking stuff.
Yeah. Right, August 3rd through the 4th, Midsummer Scream in Long Beach, California, at the Long Beach Convention Center, features dozens of on-site haunted attractions and experiences, a Hall of Shadows dark zone, as well as a Screaming Room film festival, a fashion show, and live theatrical performances. MidsummerScream.org.
Yes, indeed. And one second here. Yeah, I think actually, No, that's not right. Okay, after that, August 6th through 8th. Forget everything I was thinking, because I already did. August 6th through 8th in Nashville, Tennessee, it's the Room Escape Conference and Tour at the Music City Center. RoomEscapeShow.com for more information.
And finally, for this week, August 23rd through the 25th, it's CreepyCon, Halloween and Horror Convention. Jacob's Building features workshops.
Yeah, literally, it's just called Jacob's Building.
Yeah, it's Jacob's Building.
Who the fuck is Jacob? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just Jacob's. Features workshops, exhibitors, and a zombie beauty contest. CreepyConKnoxville.com for more info. I just want to give a shout out real quick to the OHHC group. They just had their first convention. It sounds like it was awesome. I'm loving the pictures from it.
Yeah, we have been getting, if you are a member of the Haunt Chat groups, of both Haunt Chat Live and or Haunt Chat,
right.
There have been a lot of photos coming through those, a few also on like Haunters Hangout and so forth. They are rolling in. Keep them rolling in. They look awesome. Look fun. Also, Ryan,
and Kelly.
Ryan and Kelly. I don't know why I spaced on Kelly's name.
Yeah.
I had it just a second ago. Podcasting life. Your brain's funny and stupid.
Yeah.
Ryan and Kelly, get well soon.
Yes.
Saw the car accident. Thinking of you guys. Take care of yourselves. And, you know, fuck that person who hit you.
Basically.
That's what I'm really trying to say.
Yeah.
Tell you how I really feel.
Okay.
All right. I think that covers our conferences for the week. And so now we're going to talk about the first room in the haunt. And like I said, this was an idea that came from a dream. But I realized how often we hear the mythos that the first room is the most important room.
Yeah.
It's like breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Yeah. Usually it's paired, the first and last rooms are the most important rooms in the haunt.
Everything else is just the filler, basically. It's a stuffing or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
And honestly, and one of the things I realized as I was writing the show notes out, so I was really sort of hammering this in, was I don't remember the first rooms in a lot of haunts.
Yeah.
I just realized that. It's like, I could do all the ones locally that we go to every year.
Right.
Like, I know what New Orleans Nightmare first room looked like at least the last year. I know what Rise and 13th Gate, what they all do. But, it's like, we did the tour in Chicago with Lost Souls. I remember a couple of those.
Yeah.
I remember something from every haunt.
Right.
But it's rarely the first room that stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that's not just true for me and my stupid brain.
Right.
I have a feeling it's true for other people, too. Like, Evil Intentions.
Mm-hmm.
The first room I remember is the seance room. But I think there was a room before that, and I can't remember what was in it. But the big thing I remember was the false ending with the chainsaws. Right. And you turn the corner, and there's this big, giant church facade out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That was really memorable.
Yeah.
I may never forget that as an example. So I had that problem over and over again. But here's the thing. It does actually play an important role in a haunt.
Mm-hmm.
It sets the first impression.
Yeah.
And that first impression sets the tone and the expectation for the haunt. If you have a really amazing, decadent, immaculately detailed first room, and the rest of the haunt looks like crap, you kind of warp the tone a little.
Yeah, I may be guilty of that one.
Maybe. I don't know. I thought we had it about even keel this year.
Yeah.
I thought we did it pretty evenly this year. But yeah, and generally speaking, logically, it is one of the two rooms that's favored to be the most memorable. It doesn't always work out that way. Like I said, you can have amazing spots in the middle that really stand out.
Right.
But these rooms, the first and the last rooms, kind of have advantages, and that it's the first thing you see in the haunt and the last thing you experience.
Right.
They have like a head start on being more memorable.
Yeah.
And basically, the room's job is to get people ready for the rest of the haunt. You're gearing your customers up. I mean, yeah, the queue line does that some, but this is the walking through the haunt part.
Right.
And to be clear about something, I realized I wrote these entire show notes being very rude to our listeners who do outdoor haunts.
Yeah.
Constantly saying the word room when what I really mean is scene.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because outdoor haunts typically do have scenes.
They do have scenes, they do have sections, but they might not have rooms.
Right.
But or they might have rooms, you know, who knows? But yeah, I mean, basically, my argument, though, for not being as important as sometimes it gets hyped up to be is that it's literally the most difficult room to remember in some ways. Yeah, it's the first thing you see, but it's also the furthest one back in your mind when you exit.
Exactly. And if you've had a really good experience or a really thrilling experience...
Or a really terrible one.
Yes, they can be hard to remember.
Yeah, just so much, hopefully, happens between the first and the last room. I do believe genuinely the last room is the easiest to remember.
Yeah.
Completely, because that's what... which is one of the reasons we're going to talk about that next week. It's one of the reasons why I'm so sad and so many haunts go for the chainsaw exit. Because that's your chance to really do something that stands out and hooks in people's minds. And everyone's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I can't really remember the first rooms in a lot of haunts.
Right.
And so even though I know I've seen examples of all these that we're going to go through, I couldn't necessarily pinpoint where. So I only had like one or two examples of each. So if you do this and I didn't mention you and I've been through your haunt, especially if you're one of the Atlanta or Chicago haunts I've only been through once, there's why.
Yeah.
Something else stood out in my mind much, much more. All right. So on that note, like I said, it is still very much an important room, especially in terms of the storytelling. So one thing I did want to talk about is the storytelling aspect of it. And we just wanted to go through the approaches for the first room we've seen, and then at the very end, tie it all together and pull out some favorites and some lessons. That was my big idea for this episode.
Yeah.
Ready to get started?
Yeah.
All right. Well, approach one, the quote-unquote rules room.
Yeah.
Now, the place we see this every year is Rise.
Yes.
And basically what Rise does is you get in the queue line, and from the queue line, you get broken up into whatever your group is. And sometimes we get paired up with other people. Sometimes we don't. Depends upon how busy the night is and who's around us. And that was a weird hiccup.
Yes.
But then they funnel you into a closed room.
Right.
And an automated display of the rules. And it's a very cool effect. They do it in blood in the mirror. They really spend a lot of time and money setting this up. Breaks down the rules. And then there's a little jump scare thing and they send you on your way.
Yeah.
And then the back side of the room opens and you're into the haunt proper.
Yeah. I do really like that room.
If you're going to do that setup, that's the best way to do it. Now, we have seen it otherwise. I think it was Shadowlands that did it. Or it might have been Nightmare 3008 did it. Might have done it. I can't remember who did it. Where they have a character stop you.
Yeah.
Basically to read you the rules.
Yeah.
Oh, and what was that one we did in Alabama, Birmingham? Crap. It's going to hit me any minute now. The one we did at HauntCon. When it was in Birmingham.
Oh,
it's going to hit me any second now.
Insanitarium.
Insanitarium. Yeah, set at a school. Old school, deactivated school, whatever. / asylum. But
/ community center.
/ yeah. The building's got about a million uses. But yeah, they did it too. Where you go into the room, they shut you in, there's a character there, and they basically tell you the rules.
And so did the place at in Mississippi, the little theater one.
Poplarville, yeah.
Yeah, they did that too.
Okay, this is officially way more common than I could remember. I was getting it out of the way in the beginning because I could barely remember anybody doing it.
Yeah, but now that we're talking about it, yeah, lots of rooms do this.
See, this is why this is an organic podcast. We don't do any editing. We don't over-prep for it.
Yeah.
But shit like this happens, and you get to enjoy the spontaneity of us realizing stuff.
Yes, yes. Lots of people have characters who do this.
I hope you're happy, people. Anyway. But yeah, right. But basically, the approach is that you go in there, and whether it's some kind of visual effect like at Rise or a character, they will read you the rules and maybe do a little bit
right
of interactivity. But yeah, I've also seen it done with video packages and things like that. And now the thing about this rule is that it can be a pretty powerful tool for spacing.
Right.
Because theoretically, you know almost exactly how long each group has to be in this room. So let's say 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That means you know every group is going to have 30 seconds between it and the next one in the Hond.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is it makes it almost impossible to control throughput.
Yeah.
You have to relay the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't invest in relaying the rules in the queue line, or having on your tickets, or doing other things, you have to do it in this room.
Yeah.
And that kind of sucks, because if that 30 seconds means that you've got a 3-hour wait...
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks for the peeps in line.
Yeah, it does.
So yeah, the rules take a pretty set amount of time, even if you're using an interactive character. You can't just say, hey, Dave, just blow through the rules. Just,
yeah,
it doesn't really work.
No.
Doesn't really work, and you can't really skip or bypass it. So if you need to speed up the throughput, you can't. So if you're going to do this approach, and I'm not a big fan of it personally.
Yeah.
Because I find... To me, as a haunt attendee, this is focusing solely on haunt attendance. When they pull back the velvet rope or whatever and let me into the front door of a haunted house,
yeah,
that's a moment of excitement.
Exactly.
I get the little butterflies. Even like I've been through like hundreds of haunts, you know, I still get the little butterflies and the little niggles in my stomach. I love it.
Exactly.
And then it's like, okay, you're all excited. We're doing the rules.
Oh.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Dave.
Yeah.
Fuck you. It's always a Dave. But no, it's like, no, now I've got to get re-excited again.
Yeah. And the other thing that I don't like about it is if you do have a character reading it, couldn't that character be used somewhere else?
The queue line, maybe?
At the queue line or as an actor inside of the actual haunt doing scares. And
yeah, and then that's one of the things is...
It seems like a misuse of a person.
Really, and especially a misuse of a really good interactive actor.
Right.
Because you're going to put probably your best interactive actor in this role if you're going to use a human. You're going to have that person that's really good at popping the crowd and moving through and wheeling and dealing and jiving.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have that person there, and that means they're not going to be in the queue line entertaining people that are waiting. They're not going to be elsewhere in the haunt, maybe setting up a scene or something.
Yeah.
Those kinds of actors are really hard to come by in my experience.
Yeah, they are.
So, yeah, and yeah, that creates another problem there. I'm just not a fan of it. Like I said, it makes it impossible to control throughput. It's not what I want to do first thing when I get behind the velvet rope in a haunt.
Right.
It's rough. I understand the reasoning behind it. Like I said, it creates spacing and you got to do the rules at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. It's to me, it's frustrating. Excuse me. But yeah. But that said, if you are going to do it, the two choices you have, one is to make it really, really cool, like what Rise does.
Yeah.
The blood mirror effect is pretty bitchin', I have to admit.
Yeah.
It's a begrudging confession, but it's a confession. It's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
Or have a really, really good character and incorporate some storytelling into it. I saw one, it was one of the years of the mortuary they did it like this. They haven't done it in most years since. Okay, there are zombies behind this door. The mad scientist blah, blah, blah has let them out. Here are the rules for your survival.
You must hurry and get through and blah, 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 blah.
Please keep walking, but do not run.
Yeah.
Please follow the path that is laid out before you. Do not touch any of the zombies and da 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 da.
Yeah.
And actually incorporating the storytelling a little bit. Okay, that was a little less annoying.
Yeah.
But just to sit there and say, okay, here are the rules, kids. No touching, no one can go through all that. I'm like,
yeah.
This could have been a fucking sign.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever seen a character give rules where it could have been just a sign. Just to be clear. I think that every character that I've seen give me the rules, they worked it into their character and their storyline.
Yeah, my favorite character for that was the one at Insanitarium.
Yeah.
That little pixie girl they had. I'm trying to know any way to describe
her. She was an inventor.
She was, steampunky girl.
Yeah.
She was A, adorable as hell, B, a great character.
Yeah.
And C, actually demonstrated their touch policy in a way that was useful. It said, we will not touch you, but we can touch you with things. See? And had a feather on like a cat toy or something and rubbed it all over one of our noses or someone else in our group. Helpful.
Yeah.
Helpful, but also interactive. So that wasn't too bad. It's just in general, I don't want the first thing I do to be getting read a list of rules.
Right.
The second is kind of a variation of that, which is the interactive room.
Mm-hmm.
We saw this in Necromancer. We saw this in Asylum at Rise, the B attraction at Rise.
Right.
And Dead Rising also did it too. Of course, Dead Rising was a highly interactive haunt, but their first room was definitely the most interactive of them.
Yeah.
Basically, no rules are given. Mm-mm. The rules are usually given outside in the queue line, but there's an interactive scene that's played out. The customers are brought in, they're stood against a wall, or they're sat in the pews in the case of Dead Rising,
mm-hmm.
and a scene unfolds that they are interacted with, and they spend time in that room. And this is a great way to set the tone for an attraction,
mm-hmm.
And it gives you a little more flexibility with timing and throughput control.
Yeah.
Because you can't really muck around with how long you spend on the rules that much.
Mm-hmm.
Not unless you've got that Micro Machines guy who can read all the rules really, really fast. What you have here is, but what you can do is shorten scenes. You can say, okay, look, you need to, you know, you've been going a minute, go 30 seconds. We got to get these people through faster.
Right.
Or, hey, we don't have a line. You can hold them in there a little extra. Give them some extra space to make sure they don't crash into the next group.
Yeah.
You have that ability to use that first scene, and especially if you have a very good actor or actress that's able to make those adjustments on the fly, mm-hmm. it's really cool.
Yeah.
What were you about to say? Sorry.
Nothing. I've was just thinking about how ingenious Asylum is from this perspective, going back to the demonstrating that they're going to touch you.
Yes.
Because their first room, they do.
They do.
And I think it's the most contact you get throughout the experience.
I believe it is, yes.
But it feels like more because it's intense.
Actually, the crazy woman, I think, in Asylum touched me more later on. The one that was jumped off the bed and did all the contortionist girl.
Yes.
Yeah, she, I think, touched more. But I think that also was because the last time we were there was just you and me in the group.
Yeah.
And basically she had to be all up in our shiznit.
Yeah, we rarely go through there with more than three people.
Yeah, usually
it's usually us and one other, two.
We try when we visit haunts because, okay, and this is off topic, but hey, what the fuck, right? I know we're terrible customers for haunters.
Yeah.
I know that. I'm sorry. I've been through hundreds. I build a haunt. I'm at home. This is my happiness here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be, I'm not saying I can't be got. I can definitely be got, but even if I am got, the reaction isn't going to be popping out and on the floor and scared. That's not that. It's not going to be, that's going to be, oh, Jesus. Lord of Jesus.
I say hello a lot. Yeah,
You might get a load of Jesus from me. Or my personal favorite is when I do actually get startled or surprised, I'll say, that was great timing.
Yeah.
Because usually that's how you get me, is with amazing timing.
Yeah.
The point is, we usually try to bring someone with us who does react more.
Right.
Who is newer to this. And the reason for that is, A, so the actors have someone to fuck with.
Right.
And also, we get to see how people respond to the haunt that aren't named us.
A normal person isn't desensitized and looking for it.
Yeah.
And lots of haunts that we go to know to put us with other people because of that. Because
if you do that, I appreciate it.
Yes.
I like going in with other groups, especially scaredy cats. Now, the exception to that was when we were at Winkler's Bottom, and we were paired with a couple scaredy cats who literally were fucking gone. Like, it was like Scooby-Doo. Like, we looked at, like, scare pops up, and I'm like, scare, and we look back over where the people were in front of us.
Yeah.
And it's like Scooby-Doo, you saw the dust trail.
Yeah.
Because it was an outdoor haunt, it's the dust trail.
And you could hear her trying to keep up with him, because he was the one that was running the fastest.
He was booking.
Yeah. And she's like, you come here every year!
You made me pay this much money for and you're gonna run through the goddamn...
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was like fucking Scooby-Doo dust trail.
Anyway, back on topic.
Yeah, back on topic. Sorry. the haunt can't control that part. Right. That's what I'm saying. No. Anyways. But yeah, here the main thing is, if you're going to do an interactive room, it has to be your best character actor. It has to be your best interactive actor.
Yeah.
That's no other alternative.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say is this works better in highly interactive haunts.
Yeah.
Because Necromancer, as an example, this is haunt in Shreveport, had a really interactive first room.
Yes.
It was very interactive at it. And he was a fairly engaging character, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he did all the stuff. He did, I think, like a tiny little magic trick for us.
Yeah.
He did all kinds of neat stuff, right?
Yeah.
He really, you know, held you there. And then there was no other interactivity in the rest of the haunt.
No.
Nothing. It's like it was all front-loaded.
Now, I know that we have been told that it's a different show. Yeah. 2 hours after it opens.
Yeah, but that is also something not mentioned in any marketing material we could find.
Yeah.
We went into that. We did not know that.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyways. But that's neither here nor there. But still, that really kind of messed that up for me. Because, like, I keep expecting that level of interactivity.
Right.
And it never happened.
Yeah, it's like, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
And then it was flat.
And that's just it. It was actually a fine haunt. It was a little short for my taste.
Yeah.
But it was a fine haunt. It's just, it got me set up for that expectation.
Right.
That it couldn't meet because the rest of it was just a walkthrough haunt.
So you're saying your front room should be impressive represented,
but
and
representative.
Balanced.
Yeah, but representative.
Yes.
I think is what's important here. And yeah. Okay, approach number three, spectacle. Spectacle! Okay, the two that come to mind immediately for this one are 13th Gate with the elevators and Terror on the Coast with the giant fucking door thing they did
right.
The year we were there. I don't know if they still do it or not. They haven't been in a couple of years. But yeah, the elevators are a really good example of what I call spectacle. You're already broken up into your group, and that's kind of the moment I consider me being in the haunt.
Right.
Is when I'm with my haunt group.
Yeah, because we had this discussion because I don't consider the elevators to be the first room. Basically because on, as you mentioned lower down in the notes, on busy nights,
they bypass
them.
Yep.
So that, to me, makes it not the official first room.
And I can, you know what, that's good logic, but Terror on the Coast thing still works.
Right,
because we found out they never bypass those things, and maybe they should. Oh, man, I don't know where this call came from tonight. I swear I'm not dying, people. I swear.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, the idea is to do something really impressive that leaves people in awe. Whether it's like it's a giant doors or a very cool scene. Something that's really memorable in the beginning. Something that's unique.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Depending upon exactly what you do, it can have a major impact on your throughput or spacing. 13th Gate uses the elevators to do the spacing.
Yeah.
Which is genius. However, if it gets too busy, they skip it.
Yeah.
You just naff off and go around it.
Yeah.
There's a little bypass. I've never actually had to take the bypass.
No, me either.
But I do know they do it. Because we never go late in seasons, the real reason.
Well, and we always go on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Because Thursdays are less busy than weekends.
Yeah, I love Thursdays at the 13th Gate.
Yeah.
It really is. No, seriously, that's like my tip for going to 13th Gate, going on a Thursday.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be busy-ish.
Yeah.
But compared to what you'll see on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
You're in luck. Anyway.
And we actually went, this year was the latest we've been in a long time to 13th Gate.
Yeah, we went like 2 weeks into October. 3 weeks into October.
The week before Halloween. The Thursday before Halloween, I believe.
Yeah. But yeah. But yeah, the main thing is just keep in mind how this can impact throughput. Terror on the Coast, the year we went, had abysmal throughput. There's just no polite way to say that.
No.
It was an incredibly long wait in line for not a very long haunt.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, yes, the spectacle was cool,
mm-hmm.
but after 90 minutes in a barely moving line...
Oh, it was longer than that.
Well, it was like 2 hours. Actually, it was closer to 2 hours.
Yeah.
But with all that time waiting in line without much queue line entertainment or food or drink or anything,
yeah,
there's not much spectacle you can pull out that's going to really impress me at that point.
Right. Yeah, I'm hoping that in the past few years since we've been, they've worked out some of
the bugs. We may need to give it another shot, especially...
Because they were fairly new when we went.
They were fairly new, and I do want to... And they did seem like they were paying attention in the review.
Yeah.
that we did on garbage horror. So maybe we need to go back to that.
That we're the end all be all.
No, but it seemed, when you get criticism,
out.
Haunts either acknowledge it and go, yeah. good, you know what, we're going to work on that, or they get pissed off. That's yeah. the only two. They did not do that. They did the former.
Yes, exactly.
So that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Not that we're the end all be all, it's that they're taking criticism generally well.
I know.
That's what I'm hitting at. All right, approach number four. Do a show. Now, this one I hesitated to include mm-hmm. because I really was divided whether or not this could be considered a first room in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. This is also something that Disney does, too. But the main places we've seen is Hell's Gate and Stateville Prison, as well as the, what's the other one at Statesville? The little 3D one, the little minor one does it, too, the little second.
Oh.
I'm trying to remember the name of it. It'll hit me in a minute. But anyways, basically the idea is you don't break them up into their groups. You mm-hmm. get them in like a subgroup.
Right.
So you've got, instead of like your group of six or whatever you're going to the haunt with, you're in a group of, say, 6D that fills the room up, and you do a show. It's similar to Spectacle, but it involves not breaking up into groups first.
Right.
And this doesn't really have any impact on throughput or spacing. Not much. You do know how many people can fit in that room. You do know how long the show takes, mm-hmm. so that becomes your throughput, but the actual spacing and all that's going to have to be handled elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, something to think about. You probably have to handle it after the show. And that's just it. Both Statesville and Hell's Gate had very memorable shows.
Yeah. And they had great throughput.
Yeah.
We didn't run into a group in front of us at either.
Well, and after doing the lights on tour and behind the scenes tour at Hell's Gate, we know why.
Yes, the spacing's controlled elsewhere throughout the show.
And the spacing is controlled throughout the haunt in a very ingenious way. I mean, I think every haunter should do the behind the scenes tour at Hell's Gate.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm just going to say that because it is that good and that important of a tour because I went through the haunt going, now, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. I can tell we're just going up and then over a few feet and going right back down. This seems silly. Why are we doing this? And then you learn why those things are done and what they do with it.
And we're not going to give it away.
No.
You're going to have to go. You're either going to have to get your own private
tour. Or go back
tour.
To the previous episode we talked about it.
Well, yeah, you could do that too.
I don't remember which one it was, but we did talk about it.
Yeah. Or go on the Chicago Lost Souls bus tour.
Yes.
Because that's how we got there.
Yes. And I do recommend that bus tour.
Yeah.
The main thing, though, is once again, you run the danger of freeloading good stuff in the haunt. You also run the risk of setting expectations. Now, I would say Hell's Gate nor Statesville did that because mm-hmm. the haunts themselves were amazing.
Right.
And so, yeah, the show was probably the most memorable part, but I don't remember going through the rest of the haunt going, well, this is nothing like that show led me to think it was going to be.
No, the detail was there for everything.
Yeah, it was pretty evenly keeled. And like I said, it could be a great way to start haunt and get people hyped. And if you do something interesting or unique with a show, like with Hell's Gate and Statesville, it could become your hook in what you're known for.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, approach five, dead space. I see this personally at a lot of charity haunts and smaller haunts.
Right.
Chamber of Horrors did it locally. We kind of do, but kind of not.
Yeah, I don't
think we really do, but...
No.
But basically the idea is your first sequence is a long, winding path that leads into your actual first room.
Yeah, basically a hallway.
Basically a hallway with twists and turns, though.
Yeah.
And the reason that's kind of an interesting idea to me is because, like I said, when you pull back the velvet rope and I'm going to a haunt, I'm naturally hyped.
Yeah.
And that just allows that hype, the self-hype, to build a little bit before the first room.
Yeah.
And it gives a little bit of a breather, too. I mean, people will go into the first sequence with their guard up. This lets them drop it just that tiny little bit. Oh, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
So there's nothing in this sequence. And they hit the first room and you can nail them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fix throughput or spacing in any way. It doesn't really change that. You're going to have to handle that with your cue line, which many haunts will say that is the best way to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say I disagree, because you can just radio the guy at the front of the line and say, hey, we need to start letting in groups of eight instead of just six.
Yeah.
You know, we need to let them in every 30 seconds, not every minute, you know.
Right.
You can do that. But yeah, I mean, is this approach good? No, I don't think so. I don't really like it, but I also do see some potential merit to it, especially for a budget haunt, that can use it as a way to, I don't want to say set expectations, because setting nothing as an expectation isn't really setting an expectation.
Right.
But as a way to manage the flow into that first room and basically ensure that people, it also avoids, another thing it does is avoids runouts.
Right. That's the main reason we have our
little entrance.
Because yeah. Jonathan may have been knocked down to the ground once before we really learned to build.
Yeah, I'm really glad we figured out how to build the entranceway so people don't run out the entranceway.
Yeah.
Before we built the queue line structure.
Yeah.
I may have been dead if we did those in the reverse order once.
Yeah.
Just may have been like completely sent through the queue line structure.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an approach. I've seen it a few times. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Approach 6 and the final one we're discussing is just a room. Evil yeah. intentions, netherworld, once again, us.
Yeah.
Basically have a good room, but just a room. Don't actually aim to do anything super special with the first room.
Yeah.
Just have it aim to be a solid room that fits in with the rest of the haunt nicely. Just have it be similar size, similar importance, blah, blah, blah. Nothing particularly special about it. If you weren't telling a story or a narrative, you could just swap it out with other rooms and it'd be fine.
Yeah.
Once again, this doesn't control throughput or spacing. Maybe something you want to handle on the queue line side anyways. But it keeps expectations perfectly where they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically enables people to jump right into the haunt. You know what I mean? They're starting with the haunt experience right away.
Yeah.
Now, that said, it doesn't really produce a memorable experience.
Right.
Usually. I mean, it's like we discussed in the intro. You already have a hard enough time remembering the first... We have a hard enough time remembering the first room. When that first room is just a room, it's going to be nearly impossible.
Yeah.
And if you want that to stand out and be remembered, then this isn't a good approach. However, it is often the only option if you're a smaller haunt.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have room to put in a spectacle of some stripe. You may not have room to put in a long, snaky hallway, which I think of that as more of the classic spook house style haunt when I see those now.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
You don't see those things so much anymore. So it's something to think about, though. So this raises the question, and we have, you know, about... How long do we have? We've got about 10 minutes left, a little bit over 10 minutes. So about perfect timing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This raises the question, which approach is best? And of course, there's no dedicated answer to that.
No.
And the reason there's no dedicated answer is because it depends upon your needs.
Mm-hmm.
If you have throughput issues, if you're struggling, especially in your busier nights, to get everyone through in a timely fashion and get those dollar bills... you're going to need a first room that allows more flexibility.
Yeah.
You're either going to have to do a first room that's just a room or something or a spectacle you can adjust on the fly. But you're not going to want to have a rules room, for example,
right.
Because you're going to have a difficult time adjusting your throughput. And so you can't crank it through. You can't have that conga line system.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that, like, I do agree with Leonard Pickle on. I mean, there ain't much. But one of the things I do agree is that every haunt should be designed with the idea that if we absolutely have to, we can go for the conga line approach and still be effective.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes to where you position your scares. It comes to where, you know, you hide people and hide things. But your first room also plays a role. If you have to have something in that first room that takes 30 seconds, a minute, or whatever, you're never going to be able to do that.
Right.
You can't make that switch.
No.
So, you have to think about these things now. If you have a space issue, if you don't have a lot of square foot.
Right.
Like Dead Rising, I think, is a good example of this.
Yeah.
You're going to want to go with something that is more space conservative. They went with an highly interactive first room.
Right.
That bled into the middle part of the haunt, which was more traditional walkthrough,
mm-hmm.
and then exited with another interactive room.
Right.
So their first and last rooms were both highly interactive.
Yeah, it was nice bookends.
It was nice bookends, yeah. So that's pretty cool. That was a good use of the space.
Yeah.
That's how you take a haunt that may not be much bigger than our garage,
yeah,
but make it a full haunted house experience.
Right.
And it, we were in there a good 10 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, a haunt that I think Japes or someone, I don't remember who said it was only a little bit over 2,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Which is not big as haunts go.
No, it's not. Yeah, that would be a comfortable size for us to scale up to.
Yeah, we could scale up to 2,000 square feet pretty easily. Yeah. I feel we'd have to build a lot of fucking panels in a hurry.
Well, yeah. But...
we're making a jig, baby.
Yes.
Yeah, we've never built a panel jig.
No.
Never really needed to, because we only build like 2 or 3 new panels a year, tops.
Yeah, if that. Not even that anymore.
Not these days. We're too many years in. We have enough solid frames, we can reskin them.
Yeah.
Without building new frames.
Exactly.
Those 2x4 frames, you take care of them. They'll take care of you.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think the choice of which is better, you have to look at what your haunt really needs and also what your haunt contains on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not a very interactive haunt, you probably don't want to have a very interactive front room.
Right.
You might want to go for a traditional spectacle room. You want to throw something in there that's wild and dangerous, but not super interactive, not character driven. But like I said, the main thing for me is I would want something that I can be flexible with my throughput no matter what. Because we've seen what happens here on the coast. When you have a line and you can't adjust your throughput because of that first sequence, that first room.
Right. Yes, as impressive as it is.
As impressive as it is, as cool as it was.
Yeah.
There was no reason for us to be in that queue line as long as we were.
No, there wasn't.
And it's... because they have that very great entrance sequence that they cannot speed up.
Yeah. Unless they just leave the doors open.
At least they could not speed it up. Well, yeah. You know, you would think if they were going to do that, they would have done it the night we were there and the queue line was totally full.
I'm saying in the years after we were
maybe
there.
Maybe. But yeah, I mean... and that does raise one of the issues with that spectacle style of first room, is if you do have to bypass it on your busiest nights.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a bad idea. You might have customers like, oh man, I came for the elevators.
Yeah.
Oh man, I came for the giant door thing. And yeah. Tearing the coast. I don't know how else to describe it. I'm sorry. It was a giant pair of doors in like the woods. It was cool.
Yeah.
But it choked their throughput.
Yeah.
We realized they were only letting a group in like every 2 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Be thinking about your throughput needs. The first real room in our haunt is just a room. We take the just a room approach because of the space constrictions. We only have 5 zones.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already... at pretty much max throughput on Halloween night.
Yeah. So which room are we talking about now?
Currently, it'll be the bar this year.
Oh, the library.
The library slash
library from last year.
Yeah,
so if you came to HauntCon last year and you saw the haunt.
That's just a room.
That's the library.
Now, when I said dead space, I do think of the little L that we have on the outside. But
right.
It's not really much dead space other than a zigzag. It's not really what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because I go back to the old spook house. And those, and I think the dead space ones, I was thinking about this while we were talking, was really common in haunted houses in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
But seems to have fallen out of favor.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, then you've got combinations where you're... again, at Rise, you've got the room with the rules, but then you've got a long hallway before the first real scene.
Yeah.
And I think that would count as a dead space.
It is. Because there's no real scares in it.
No, there aren't.
It's like an attic sequence that morphs into, well, the rest of the attic sequence.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was attic or church.
Or library. Oh, God. No, the church, I think that is House of Shock used to do that one.
Yeah, but they've done it now here, too. But I don't know.
I don't remember if
they
it was
all,
the attic library.
Together.
It was an old house, basically, is what I think of. Yeah. And it was actually kind of cool how when you left the rules room, you would start out in a fairly undecorated area.
Yeah.
And then it would slowly morph into
exactly. This
old demolished house. And then you'd arrive in the room. It was actually a really cool effect.
Yeah, I think for Dead Space, you have to have at least 3 turns.
Yeah. And I don't think they have 3 turns at Rise. I think it's just 1 hallway.
Yeah. I don't know.
and three turns with no real scares. And it might seem like a crazy amount, but like I said, if you have a problem, and I think honestly the best situation for that entranceway, in my opinion, might be if you're a haunt that deals and caters heavily with children.
Yes, who are going to bolt and try to run you over.
Who are going to bolt or are really, really, really scared. This gives them an opportunity to calm down and build their confidence before going in.
Yeah.
And I kind of dig that idea when I put it like that because, you know, it sometimes pays to pull your punches a little bit in the beginning.
Yeah.
You can get them later.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a big enough haunt, you can crescendo. And that's the other thing is if you pop really high to begin with, where do you crescendo to? You've got to drop off immediately so you can crescendo back up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you pop really big in your first room, what's your second and third room going to be like now?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got to have some variance there to have a really compelling experience. So, something else to think about there is maybe look at your second and third rooms and see what they look like and see if you're going to have to start big, then taper off, and then come back up. Is it, you know, where is one going to be the downbeat, basically, of the symphony?
Mm-hmm.
One way to think of it. But yeah, you just find an intro which fits your specific needs. There's no right or wrong here. And that's one of the things I do love about haunting is it's an artistic expression.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong to this. The only right or wrongs have to do with safety, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You can make a compelling first room with just about anything, out of just about any style or strategy, including, like I said, nothingness. Pipe in some crickets. Pipe in some ambiance. Don't do any, you know what I mean? Pipe in some stuff. Make it eerie, but don't do the scares. Let people adjust.
Yeah.
You can make that pretty cool and memorable.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool if it felt like you were walking into a dream. Like, if you started out in dark, and then as you walk, it got brighter and more decorated, and there's music pumping into the background, and
then you do the last turn, and you're in a room,
yeah,
and boom, you're off to the races on the story
exactly.
And the haunt. That could be interesting. That's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of ways that you can really play this off, and I think that's one of the things about the first room is I have seen so many variations of the first room and what people do with it. And most have at least been interesting, at least the ones I can remember. And the only ones I really hated were the ones that messed with throughput.
Yeah.
And the ones that caused the haunt to choke and slow down.
Right.
Because there's no spectacle, there's no interactivity, there's nothing that's worth making your customers wait longer than necessary.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
There's just nothing in that first room. If you want to do that type of interactivity, you maybe consider doing it in the queue line.
Yeah.
There are other options you can do it in. So, yeah, think about those things. Look at your second and third room also. See where it fits in terms of the scare factor and the intensity. Because I know every haunter says, oh, we want every room to be super intense. No you don't. Because if you go up here and you stay way up here the whole time, people adapt to that. And then that stops being enough.
Yeah.
You've got to either, if you're going to pop big, you've got to come back down and let them drop their guard before building for hitting them again.
Yeah.
You got to give them breathers. You got to give them a chance to basically, you know, the chance to catch their breath. Sometimes literally. Well, anyways, I think that's the conversation on first room. Is there any, let us know if there are any types of first rooms that we missed. One of the things I've been enjoying is we've been doing these far afield haunt tours and seeing the different styles of haunting in
right.
other places, learning a lot about what haunted houses in Atlanta and Chicago like to do, for example, in Illinois and in the St. Louis area. Looking forward to doing another one this year.
Yeah.
Haven't quite decided where. The plan we had kind of got bloated up, but we got some ideas. So we're going to do that come September, October.
Yes, and if you have a first room that you love, let us
either,
know.
Either one you built or one you've been to.
Exactly.
Either or is fine.
Let us know.
Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook. And you can also use the contact form at hauntweekly.com, which is our website. We are also tinyurl.com/hauntweekly. That's our YouTube channel. And we're also on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are distributed. Well, until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode number 181, talking about The First Room. We will see you guys next time when we'll be discussing The Last Room, a.k.a., as I'm sure we all know, the chainsaw room. It's where you're legally obligated to do nothing but chainsaws. It's in the Haunter's Code. There's nothing else you're allowed to do. There, I just saved you a podcast lesson. No, I think it's going to be a little more involved in that.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hope so. We'll see you guys then, hopefully, for a more in-depth conversation. Take care.